Chapter 9. The GeneTech vault lay within reach. Korax allowed himself a moment to see if he remembered anything about the inner defences, but there was nothing in the Emperor's memories. Once through the labyrinth, Korax would simply have to unlock the vault doors, and they would stand before the prize.
"Ready your servitors," the Primarch told Nexin. "We enter the labyrinth in 2 minutes."
23 Raven Guard were dead, another 17 crippled and left in the labyrinth to be recovered later, a further 13 wounded but able to continue. The custodians had also lost 3 warriors. Korax had committed all of their names to memory, but now was not the time to mourn or mark their passing. The labyrinth remained to be unlocked. Korax's commands continued to spill from his lips in a constant stream, moving the pieces of the puzzle to where they were needed. He tried not to think of them as living, breathing warriors. Ever since he had first sent his prison army to fight against the guards of Lycaeus, he had known his orders would see men die. Though the adversary he now attempted to outwit was no sentient foe, though in a sense he was being pitted against the guile of the Emperor himself, the sacrifices required were no different. Millions, probably billions of the Emperor's followers would die if the Raven Guard failed today and could not cause Horus to pause in his advance on Terra. So it was that the chatter of bolter fire that now echoed distantly from the maze and blared harsh over the Voxnet did not divert his attention from the task. He thought only of report and command. His legiones Astartes had sworn oaths to lay down their lives in his service and for the cause of the Emperor, and it would be vanity to think this battle was any different. The lead elements of the force were almost 2/3 of the way through the maze. Parts of the labyrinth had been secured, the positions of the squads and the routes they had taken forcing the mechanism of the labyrinth into impossible choices, so that engines broke, pistons froze, and gears seized. The hardest part was over. The remaining possible configurations had dwindled to the extent that Korax could clearly see the path ahead. It was just a matter of time until the labyrinth was bested. The Primarch warned himself against complacency. The labyrinth was still a random device, constantly changing, and could throw up a challenge he had not yet encountered and could not foresee. His brave Raven Guard and the warriors of the Legio Custodes still placed their lives in his hands. He directed several squads to converge on a massive turntable that would open up a main access way towards the inner reaches of the mountain. This done, he signalled Arcatus on a direct channel.
"Custodian, you must move your men into the chamber flanking your right," he said. "You will be breaching a line of strong defences. Be prepared." "The Custodian Guard is always prepared, Primarch," Arcatus replied. "It seems from the reports I have been hearing that you have directed my squad into the teeth of the hardest opposition. Perhaps you hope we will fall and thus rid you of our scrutiny."
"I have no desire to do so," Korax replied without rancor at the accusation. "Had I wished you disposed of, I have had many opportunities already. Your warriors see the hardest fighting because they are the best under my command. You and your men have abilities even above those of my legionaries, and so it is against the toughest challenges you have been pitched. The Raven Guard owes you a debt of honor for your aid, which I have found of the highest value, making this task a little easier for all of us."
There was no reply for a while, the custodian perhaps taken aback by Korax's words.
"Very well," Arcatus said. "We shall continue as you say."
The whine of hydraulics caught Korax's attention as Nexin and his servitors joined the Primarch.
"The vault is open?"
the Magos asked.
"It will be soon," said Korax.
He worked out the quickest route through the labyrinth to the front of the advance and pointed to one of the openings.
"This way. Follow me."
Standing close to Korax, Alpharius could hear the Primarch's conversation with Arcatus, Agapito, and the Tech Priest. They discussed the immense vault door that now barred further progress. It was circular, 5 meters across, and of a metal that reflected the light dully, something which Alpharius had not seen before. The hinges were massive, as tall as him, but there was no sign of a locking mechanism. No rune pad, no scanner, not even a keyhole. Around the door smoked the remains of 4 gun turrets that had sprung from the floor as the lead elements of the force had approached. Alpharius listened patiently as the commanders discussed the options. Agapito favored melter charges, but the Primarch was not convinced they would breach the barrier. The Magos claimed his servitors could cut their way through. More squads were emerging from the beaten labyrinth, some of them bearing dead warriors. Korax had assured his force that the fighting was over for the moment. Alpharius had been alarmed when the maze had been held in the grip of a titanic shuddering, the screeching of metal echoing along the tunnels and rooms, smoke from burning oil drifting through the air. It had lasted several seconds, and the Alpha Legionnaire had thought the whole complex was collapsing. When it had finished, Korax had announced calmly that the labyrinth was stuck, unable to respond to further movement. He had dispatched search teams to return to isolated and fallen brethren, but Alpharius and his fellow squad members had been directed towards the vault entrance, along with a majority of the expedition. It was there he had come across the senior leaders of the force, balked by this final obstacle. The conversation had reached an impasse. "Burrowing through would take many hours, days perhaps, if it is even possible," Agapito was saying. "Is there no other way?" Korax seemed lost in thought for a moment, eyes half closed, before he replied, "It is a psychic lock," said the Primarch, his whole demeanor changing, shoulders slumping with disappointment. "It can only be activated by the mind of the Emperor."
"Then we must rely upon physical means," said Orlandrias.
The Magos gestured towards the two heavy servitors looming over the group.
"I shall prepare my servants."
"There is another way," said Korax, straightening, filled with purpose again.
He glanced at Arcatus before his eyes came to rest on Alpharius. The Alpha Legionnaire was disturbed by that dark gaze, but did not react.
"Balsa Kuthuri is in your squad, yes?"
"He is, Lord," replied Alpharius, glancing towards the named legionary, who stood a few meters away from the group.
"He was once a member of the Librarius," Korax continued.
Alpharius did not know his squad brother was a psyker, and was taken aback by the thought, but assumed Korax would not have misremembered. He nodded.
"Yes, Lord, he was,"
said Alpharius, unsure of the Primarch's intent. He called for Balsar to join his superiors.
"This is unwise," said Arcatus, stepping between the Primarch and the approaching legionary, his halberd raised. "Do you not remember these words? Woe betide he who ignores my warning or breaks faith with me. He shall be my enemy, and I will visit such destruction upon him and all his followers that until the end of all things he shall rue the day he turned from my light." Such were the words of the Emperor.
"The Edict of Nicaea," Korax said with a nod. "I remember the words well, Custodian. I heard them myself from the lips of the Emperor."
"Then you understand their meaning. Sorcery is condemned. I cannot allow this," said Arcatus.
Korax pursed his lips in thought and then gently laid a hand on the warrior's shoulder, guiding him aside. He looked at the legionary standing before him.
"Balsar, you have powers of the mind, yes?" he asked.
"I was a librarian, Lord, it is true," replied the battle brother. "I have not exercised my powers since the Librarius was disbanded by your command, and have sworn not to employ them."
"To whom did you swear that oath, Balsar?"
"To you, Lord Korax," the legionary replied.
"And if I release you from that oath, can you use your powers now?"
"My lord, I also swore in the name of the Emperor to cease using my abilities," said Balsar, his voice trembling.
"Are you ordering me to break my oath?"
The word struck a chord in Korax, his lips twitching with frustration. It lasted only for a few seconds before the Primarch's expression hardened again, dark eyes narrowing.
"This will not happen," barked Arcatus, before Korax could speak.
His custodians assembled around him, summoned by some means Alpharius had not detected.
"The Edict of Nicaea is absolute."
Korax ignored them all and addressed Balsar again.
"Have you ever felt dark temptations?" the Primarch asked, his tone harsh and dismissive. "Do you feel any now?"
"No, my lord. I have never felt any temptation, dark or otherwise,"
Balsar replied dryly.
My life has been woefully bereft of temptation since I left Terra.
I will not allow sorcery, not here on Terra itself, said Arcatus.
A glimmering field sprang into life along the length of his halberd blade and was matched by the glow of the other custodian's weapons. This was greeted by the raising of several dozen bolters by the assembled Raven Guard. Alpharius followed suit a moment later, directing his weapon at the custodian guard.
You use words whose meaning you do not understand, said Korax, his expression growing grim. The Emperor guards Terra from the most unnatural powers. Do you think he will allow such a thing on his world?
I do not guess the mind of the Emperor. I merely ensure his decree is enforced, replied Arcatus.
He looked around at the legionaries that surrounded him, and then back at Korax.
Sorcery is forbidden.
Do you judge the Emperor to be a sorcerer, custodian? Or perhaps his regent, the Sigillite?
The edict does not concern my superiors, only the warriors of the Legiones Astartes,
Arcatus said coolly. The two sides faced each other in silence, fingers tight on their weapons. Alpharius looked at Korax, trying to judge the Primarch's next move. It would go badly if the custodians were killed. Investigations would follow that would not only hamper the retrieval of the vault contents, but might also lead to the discovery of the Alpha Legion infiltrators. There was also the very real possibility that Alpharius would be killed in the fighting, as Korax's summons had brought him close to the custodians. It was impossible to guess at Arcatus's intent, his face hidden behind his golden-masked helm. Similarly, the Raven Guard were faceless warriors, their weapons showing their intent with no hint of reluctance. Only Korax's face could be seen. The Primarch looked pensive, but his eyes never moved from Arcatus. Korax held no weapon, but Alpharius knew well enough that the Primarch was fully capable of killing Arcatus without armament. He wondered what dark temptations played on the Primarch's mind at that moment. A single blow would fell Arcatus, and the Raven Guard had the other custodians surrounded, though the gold-armored warriors would surely slay many legionaries before they fell.
Father, do not abandon us.
Korax's voice was a whisper, not meant to be heard by the others. There was anguish in those few words, spoken between gritted teeth. Alpharius sensed something, emotion or sensation on the edge of awareness. It seemed that he heard distant howling and screaming for a fraction of a moment. It was as if he was in the heart of fiery battle, his body responding as if he was fighting for his life. Hearts pounding, blood racing. A looming presence filled the corridor, an oppressive surge of power that seemed to compress Alpharius's skull. From the disconcerted murmurings of others, he knew he was not alone in feeling it. A dull clang echoed from the door. All eyes turned towards the portal, where a golden gleam emanated from the metal, glittering with power. The door swung inwards, and lights flickered into life beyond as the auric glow faded to reveal a white-walled antechamber. There was a smaller door beyond, of silvery metal. Every surface was covered in a thin, icy sheen. Vapor swirled as cold, sterile air washed from the entranceway. The silence was absolute as the assembled warriors stared in disbelief at the open doorway. Korax briefly bowed his head, eyes closed, his lips moving, though the words he spoke were too quiet to hear. Alpharius glanced at Balsar and saw a few golden motes of energy dancing from the lenses of his helm. Korax noticed this too and stepped between the former librarian and Arcatus, quickly blocking the custodian's view.
It seems the Emperor has intervened, said the Primarch, directing his gaze towards the custodians.
Arcatus and his warriors remained poised.
Korax motioned for his Raven Guard to lower their weapons, some of them doing so only reluctantly.
The Primarch turned his attention back to Arcatus, who stood down his own men after a moment.
Wait, said Korax.
Suddenly, weapons were raised again. Behind the Primarch, Nexin had taken a step towards the opening. The Magos stopped and looked back to see the scowl on the Primarch's brow.
Apologies, Lord Korax, said the Martian with a deep bow. You will lead. I will follow.
Alfarius lingered for a moment as Korax and the others headed towards the vault. He stopped Balsar with a hand on his arm.
"That was not the will of the Emperor, was it?" Alfarius said.
"I do not know what you mean," replied the legionary. "It is forbidden for me to use my powers. I was not relieved of my oath."
"But still," said Alfarius,
it seemed unlikely that the Emperor had intervened on their behalf, having not made his presence felt throughout the tortuous journey through the death traps. It had to have been Balsa's doing.
"That wasn't really the Emperor, was it?"
Balsar said nothing, and left Alfarius to fall in behind the departing Primarch and commanders. Alfarius could not tell whether Balsar was lying or not, though there had been no trace of deception in his voice. He felt tense at the thought of Psykers using their powers again, and equally disturbed by the idea that the Emperor had perhaps witnessed what went on and intervened on Korax's behalf. No amount of deception would protect him if one of the former librarians decided to delve into his mind, despite the precautions taken by the Psykers of the Alpha Legion to shield his mind from casual inspection. The threat of psychic discovery had always been present, but the realization that such a warrior was in Alfarius' squad was a more distinct worry. If the librarians returned, his task would become a lot harder. He would have to watch his thoughts as much as his deeds and words. The main vault was a circular room with a domed ceiling carved into the naked rock. There were several other doors leading from it, but it was the contents of the central chamber that dominated Korax's thoughts as he stepped across the threshold. He could not recall any defences in this inner sanctum, though he had a flash memory of a final failsafe. Any interference with the outer door would have seen the contents destroyed by a fusion charge set underneath the vault. Perhaps it was the presence of this memory that had stopped the Primarch ordering the cutters and drills brought forth, though it was only now that the dire consequences of such an act were clear to him. His misgivings about the events that had just transpired evaporated, replaced by satisfaction, curiosity, and a sense of awe. Here was the Emperor's laboratory, where it could be said the Imperium was truly created. This was the birthplace of the Primarchs. Everything was pristine, environmental regulators and stasis fields maintaining the facility in the exact condition it had been left. The air was clean, every surface brightly scrubbed. A large device sat at the heart of the room, dormant for the moment, but riddled with energy cables and pipes, not dissimilar to the machinery Korax had thought he had glimpsed around the Emperor's golden throne. It reached to the ceiling, covered with glass-panelled openings that showed hundreds of dials and files, tubes of coloured liquids, and touch-screen interfaces. Under the direction of Agapito and Arcatus, the custodians and Raven Guard fanned out, securing the other doorways. The Emperor's memories were hazy on what lay behind them, but Korax had a dim recollection of vast generators, freezing chambers, data banks, and room upon room of cogitating machines. Thick cables coiled out from the central machine, snaking across the plainly tiled floor to 20 other devices arranged in a circle around the chamber. Korax recognized them immediately, the incubators of the Primarchs. They were empty of their artificial amniotic fluids, their glass cases raised open. Where lights had flickered, gauge needles had wavered and monitoring systems chirped and beeped, now there was lifelessness and silence. Magos or Landrias started gasping and muttering, wandering from one machine to the next with wide eyes. Korax smiled at the almost childlike delight with which the tech priest was drawn from one sight to the next, occasionally pausing to place a reverent hand on a piece of technology, often stopping to gaze dumbly at something suddenly revealed to him. Each of the incubators was numbered on its side. Korax quickly sought out number 19, his own chamber. He realized something was wrong as he approached. The incubator was incomplete, its insides missing like a tomb with no coffin within. Only the casing and outer protective canopy remained. A mess of cables and pipes lay loose at the bottom of the shell, disconnected. He remembered the cracked and broken machine that had been found beside him beneath the glacier.
For years, long and lonely years, he had wondered about that machine and its purpose. Only when the Emperor had come to deliverance had the Primarch learned what he was, and how it was he had awoken on that strange, desolate moon. Korak still vividly remembered that meeting, laying his hands upon the incubator chamber, brought it back to his thoughts.
"Scanners have picked up an object moving towards the main dock," reported Agapito, standing at one of the scanner arrays. The youthful freedom fighter was wearing the black trousers of a guard, the jacket that had completed the disguise discarded once the tower had been opened to the guerrillas. A curving slash was slowly forming a scab across his bare chest, and his left arm was wrapped in a fresh bandage.
"Trajectory implies a landing pattern, but it's impossible to say what sort of craft."
The main tower was still heavily damaged and in disarray from the fighting. Corvus's followers manned the stations as best they could, but the equipment was barely functioning, and most of them were working from guesswork rather than training. That anything had been detected by the shattered scanner array was remarkable. The bodies of those who had worked here before had been removed, but there were still bloodstains on the grill of the floor and brushed metal consoles. Cleaning up the detritus of revolution was low on Corvus's list of priorities, whilst there remained men alive on Kiavar who opposed his rebellion. Many of the screens and keypads were shattered from weapons fire, and exposed wiring burst messily from larger rents in the equipment banks. But power had been restored, and a few crackled with life under the nurturing of Corvus's most technically gifted followers. The defense turrets that littered the immense spire of the main guard tower were definitely operational. The revolutionaries, under Corvus's command, had ensured they had been taken intact, as their leader had instructed.
"Bringing the weapon system to lock on," announced Bran, standing at the firing console.
Like his brother, he showed the wounds of war, sporting a graze across his cheek, a patch of blood matting the light scattering of downy hair on his chin. The tower rumbled as immense turrets moved into position, targeting their mass drivers towards the incoming vessel. Bran looked expectantly over his shoulder at the revolutionary leader, tousled hair falling over his youthful face.
"Shall we fire?" asked Bran.
"No," replied Corvus. He stood at the armored window of the control room, looking out into the darkness. Kiavar was waxing towards full, looming large behind the mine workings and crane gantries on the horizon. From this distance, it looked the same as ever, but Corvus knew that below the welter of swirling red clouds, the planet was in turmoil. He fancied he could still see the aftermath of the atomic detonations unleashed by the mining charges his forces had dropped down the gravity well to the import station below. But it was just a fancy. The guilds were broken, that much he had already learned. Denied the resources of Lycaeus, their counterattacks against the moon bloodily repelled, they had taken to fighting amongst themselves, pitting the strength of their city factories against each other. Some had sent signals asking for truce, fearing further atomic bombardment from orbit. Corvus had ignored their pleas. Let them kill each other, he thought, staring at the world that had enslaved millions for generations. Corvus's reflection was superimposed over the rising orb of Kiavar against the thick glass. He was a grown man now. More than a grown man, there was barely room for him to stand straight in the control chamber at the summit of the Black Tower. They were calling him the Savior now, those he had led to freedom, and he had felt their awe at his continued growth. A decade had passed since his first encounter with the inmates of Lycaeus, but it was only now that he enjoyed his first moment of celebration. Victory was his. The overlords had fallen.
"Craft still approaching," said Agapito, his voice betraying nervousness. "Bran, how is that lock-on holding up?"
"Still have half the weapon systems targeted, brother. No problems," replied Bran. "Corvus, we only have a few minutes until the flight path brings the approaching craft too close to fire."
"We will not fire," Corvus said, turning to face his companions. "It may be a diplomatic mission from Kiavar. I can see it. It is a shuttle, nothing more. It can't hold more than a dozen men at the most, no threat to us. Have a company of the 8th Wingers meet me at the main dock." There was something else about the shuttle that intrigued Corvus. At the moment, it was barely a glint of gold in the distance, but the revolutionary leader was filled with a sense that its passengers were important. The sense nagged at him, not as a warning, but something else he was unable to define. Corvus felt assured that those aboard the approaching craft bore him no ill intent, though he could not say why he felt such conviction that this was true.
"Let me know if anything changes,"
he told the others, patting the bulky communications handset hanging from his belt. Corvus ducked under the rim of the mangled security door and into the corridor beyond. A handful of prisoners with scavenged shotguns stood guard outside, an unnecessary precaution, but one that had been insisted upon by his followers. The self-appointed bodyguard fell in behind their commander, without command, joining him in the chamber of the Black Tower's main conveyor. The elevator rattled down several dozen floors until it reached the accessway that led to the main port landing apron. Ignoring his companions, Corvus strode quickly along the passageway, past work teams that were busy labouring with welders and metal panels to reinforce the repairs that had been hastily made after the tower's occupation. Blue sparks danced in the air as Corvus made his way towards the landing port. Gapfion, one of his senior lieutenants, waited for him on the main deck with 100 of his men from the company of the 8th Wing. Above, the energy dome of the landing field cracked yellow against a starless sky.
"That was quick," Corvus remarked to his lieutenant. "We were close by,"
Gapfion replied, a hint of a smile on his lips. The left side of his face was heavily bruised, his eye closed tight, a cut running across his brow. His grey hair was cropped short, but his beard dangled almost to his belt. He still wore his grey prison coveralls, but the collar was marked with half a dozen lapel studs taken from dead security officers. There was blood on most of them.
"A happy coincidence," said Corvus, directing an inquiring stare at him.
Gapfion shrugged away his leader's suspicion and turned to shout an order to his men, directing them to set up perimeter around the landing apron. They moved like soldiers, Corvus thought as he watched the ex-prisoners spreading out across the ferrocrete. A few years ago, they had been gangsters and philosophers, thieves and agitators. Now they were his army, well-drilled and highly motivated. He knew much of the credit was his, but in turn he owed a lot to whoever had given him the gifts he possessed. People listened to him without doubt, and he had an innate understanding of fighting. To direct an attack or devise a strategy came as naturally to Corvus as breathing. Some of the men were pointing upwards and shouting. A craft appeared beyond the field barrier, twin trails of plasma bright against the dark sky. As it descended through the barrier high above, Corvus saw that it was shaped like a great mechanical bird of prey, golden in colour with angled wings that stretched back like those of a diving hawk. It hovered for a moment, and plasma engines dimmed as the pilot switched to anti-gravitic impellers to land the craft. Falling slowly, the shuttle came to rest at the centre of the apron within the inner circle marked there in red paint. Corvus looked through the canopy and was surprised to see that the cockpit was empty. He suddenly felt a hint of suspicion at the seemingly unmanned craft. Perhaps it was loaded with explosives, a desperate act of petty revenge from one of the guildmasters.
"Ready weapons,"
Gapfion called out. The men raised an assortment of slug-throwers, shotguns and las rifles looted from dead guards and captured weapons lockers. A door opened in the side of the shuttle beneath the right wing, directly opposite Corvus. Light spilled from within as a gangplank extended from the craft with a clang. A shadow appeared in the light, waiting for a moment at the entryway before emerging into view. Whispers spread through the men of surprise and amazement. Guns quivered in shaking hands, and there were clatters as some of the soldiers dropped their weapons. Seemingly without prompt, the men lowered themselves to the ground, putting aside their weapons and bowing their heads. Some prostrated themselves, whispering fervently. Corvus glanced to Gapfion beside him. The lieutenant was on his knees, too. There were tears in his eyes and an expression of joy etched on his slack-lipped face.
"So majestic," Gapfion muttered. "What glory! What power!"
Confused, Corvus directed his attention to the man descending the landing ramp. He seemed unremarkable. In fact, he seemed so unremarkable that Corvus could discern not a single distinguishing feature about him. He was of average height, with dark hair and moderately tanned skin. In build, he was neither bulky nor slight, but of normal proportion, slightly larger than the malnourished men who now abased themselves before him. He was dressed in a robe of white linen,
free of ornamentation except for a necklace of gold, on which hung a pendant fashioned in the shape of an eagle with outspread wings, a lightning bolt in its claws. The man's eyes were as indistinct as the rest of him, neither blue nor green nor grey nor brown, but a flecked mixture of all. Yet there was something in those eyes that reached into Corvus and touched upon his inner self. There was wisdom and kindness there, and antiquity that was very humbling, but also disconcerting. And at the same time as Corvus saw this, he also witnessed the arrival of a demigod, wreathed in golden light and dressed in white finery that burned with its own light. He saw a stern face set with two golden orbs for eyes, piercing in their intensity, searing into the core of his being. The stranger seemed to tower over the kneeling men, borne forwards upon a carpet of undulating flames. It was impossible to reconcile the two images. The supreme, grandiose king of men approached Corvus, but all the while the slight, unimposing man flickered within. Finally, Corvus's mind could fight no longer against the glamour, and he saw the new arrival as his followers did, and was filled by an overwhelming urge to pay obeisance to this stranger. He fought that instinct. He had waged a war so that his people would not bow before another man. The newcomer's effect on Corvus's men unsettled the rebel leader. He stared with narrowed eyes, unable to discern which image was true and which was illusion, as the stranger paced slowly and confidently across the ferrocrete. "Who are you?" Corvus demanded. "What have you done to my men?" The stranger looked around at the guerrilla fighters regarding him with adoration, seeming to Corvus slightly nonplussed at the scene. His blonde hair fell in waves across his shoulders as he turned his head, spilling like fiery liquid. Another wave of majesty swept over Corvus, and again the guerrilla commander had to make a physical effort not to fall to his knees.
"An occupational hazard," said the man, returning his attention to Corvus.
He fixed the rebel leader with a stare, his eyes now permanently golden like bottomless wells of light. There was a glow of power beneath his skin, as if the stranger's flesh were embers masked behind thin paper. Corvus experienced a momentary fluttering in his breast and a knot of anxiety in his gut, a fraction of the effect the man was having on his warriors.
"I am the Emperor of Mankind. I created you."
Hearing these words was like a veil lifting from Corvus's eyes. He saw the Emperor as he had seen him before, watching the growing infant through the canopy of an incubator. His face had been distorted by curved plates of glass, but the features were unmistakable. The guerrilla leader had long pondered the face from his earliest memories, wondering to whom it belonged. Now vague recollections became sharp memory. Corvus recalled the noise and lights and booming voices that had engulfed him, remembered the surge of power and disorientation as unnatural forces had borne him away from the place of his creation. Now he saw and knew for certain the face of his father, the only individual worthy of Corvus's unwavering obedience. He lowered himself to one knee in deference, understanding that the stranger spoke the truth. Here was the master of mankind.
"What do you call this place?" the Emperor asked.
"It used to be called Lycaeus," Corvus replied. "Now we know it as Deliverance."
"A good name," said the Emperor. "Please rise, my son. We have much to talk about."
And they did. Corvus withdrew from his men and took the Emperor to his quarters, an old guard station in the mid-levels of the Black Tower. Corvus sought out food and drink for his guest, ashamed at the meagre fare he could offer his father. The Emperor waved away his concerns, sitting on the rough bunk that served as a chair for the massive rebel commander.
"Do you recognize me?"
the Emperor asked. His expression was hard to read, but Corvus thought he detected a hint of surprise behind the question. Whatever glamour had befallen the guerrillas had a lesser effect on Corvus, and the man before him was definitely the same as from his old memories.
"As if from a dream," he replied. "Interesting," said the Emperor, with a smile and a nod.
They spoke about many things. Though Corvus was bursting with questions about the Emperor, himself, and the wider galaxy, he found that he did most of the talking, answering constant queries from the Emperor concerning what had taken place on Deliverance and Kievar. Corvus furnished him with all the information he could concerning the history of the star system and the war for freedom he had waged over recent years. Corvus paced the room while he spoke, animated and energized. The Emperor sat on the bunk and nodded occasionally, in understanding rather than approval. In fact, he showed no judgment of any kind, no condemnation or endorsement of Corvus's actions. He listened intently to everything Corvus told him, sometimes asking exceptionally pertinent questions about the tiniest of details, wishing to absorb everything about Corvus's life. "But there is one piece missing that I cannot answer," Corvus said, finally voicing what his heart had yearned to know since his first discovery. "How is it that I came to be here?" The Emperor's mood darkened, and his face grew grim. For the first time, he took a sip from the glass of water Corvus had given him hours earlier, eyes haunted.
"There is another universe," he said. "It lies alongside ours, part of it, but also separated. It is called the Warp."
"I know of it," said Corvus, "though I've not seen it. I hear that ships can use it to travel to distant stars. Some of the machines of Kievar are said to harness the energy of the Warp."
"It is a universe of boundless power, and can be accessed, as you say, by ships and by the minds of special men that we call psychers," the Emperor continued. "Like our galaxy, the Warp is inhabited by creatures not of flesh, but thought. Sometimes they hunger for our material lives, wishing to feast on our mortality. You and your brothers were taken from me by denizens of the Warp before you were ready."
"Brothers?" Corvus was excited by the prospect, pushing aside the questions that the Emperor's answer had prompted. Though he had made many friends amongst the prisoners of Lycaeus, always Corvus had been aware of his otherness, and when they had started to call him Saviour, any hope of normal relationships had ended. That there were others like him filled Corvus with hope again.
"Yes, you have brothers,"
said the Emperor, smiling at his son's delight.
17 of them. You are the Primarchs, my finest creations."
17? Corvus asked, confused. "I remember that I was number 19. How can that be so?" The Emperor's expression grew bleak, filled with deep sorrow. He looked away as he replied,
"The other two," he said. "That is a conversation for another day."
"Where are my brothers now? Are they with you?"
"You and the other Primarchs were snatched from me by strange powers of the Warp, thrown across the galaxy on unnatural tides. That is how you came to rest beneath a glacier on this moon. Yes, I have seen what befell you, learning your life the moment I laid eyes upon you. The rumor of you, of a magnificent being who led a rebellion here, has traveled further than you realize, and it was word of this that attracted my attention. Your brothers, those I have found, were similarly scattered to far-flung worlds. Like you, they are all great warriors and leaders. That was my gift to you. You are supreme commanders, with intellect and physical ability unmatched by anything in the mass of humanity. I engineered you from my own genetic structure to be my sons and my lieutenants in the Great Crusade."
"What is this crusade? How many of my brothers have you found?"
"Most of them," replied the Emperor. "I have vast armies, the Legiones Astartes. As you are crafted from me, so they are created from you. The Primarchs are the generals of those armies, leading humanity's reconquest of the galaxy. The long night, the age of strife, has ended. The remnants of the old empires smolder out in the darkness, the dying coals of humanity almost smothered by the dark. The Great Crusade fans the flames into life, bringing with it reason to drive out superstition, enlightenment to replace barbarism. With your help, I will unite humanity and lead mankind to rule the stars.
It was so much to take in, but Corvus knew it to be true. Not only the words of the Emperor seemed certain, the idea of what he described meshed with a much deeper feeling. Knowing he was a Primarch, that he had been created to fight and to command, explained much that Corvus had never understood about himself. On a level that he understood in his spirit and was encoded into every cell of his body, Corvus knew what he was. "I swear my loyalty to you," said Corvus, sinking to one knee in front of the Emperor. He met the Emperor's gaze and felt elation like no victory had given him before. "I am your son, your Primarch, and your will shall be my command."
"That is good," said the Emperor. "I have an army waiting for you. They are the Raven Guard, highly decorated and distinguished in my campaigns already. When you are ready, you will assume command of the Legion."
"Am I not ready now?" Corvus said, having been elevated and then deflated by the Emperor's words.
"Not yet, my son," said the Emperor. "But soon you will emerge to join your brothers and take your place at my side and at the head of the Raven Guard. First, though, tell me of Kiavar. What are your intentions?"
"To bring peace to both the world and its moon, and to heal the wounds of the past," said Corvus. "With your help, I will succeed."
"Peace is the hardest goal to achieve," said the Emperor. "Victory, the cessation of war, the demilitarization of our opponents, these we can obtain with might of arms and perseverance. Peace, that is an altogether different beast."
Corvus frowned, but nodded slowly. The Emperor sipped from his glass, his gaze unmoving.
"Tell me again, then. Tell me of the wounds you and your followers inflicted upon this world, and of the peace you would bring to it with my help."
There was palpable excitement amongst the legionaries within the inner vault. Alpharius had seen many things in the service of his legion, sights that would stay with him until he died, of strange worlds and even stranger foes. But the very mundanity of his surroundings added to their mystique. This was a place of science, the laboratory where the Emperor had set about bringing to life his vision for the galaxy. Unnoticed by the others, Alpharius walked around the circle of incubators until he came to the one numbered 20. The last, always overlooked. His Primarchs had begun their lives in this metal and glass construction. It looked the same as the others, no larger to account for the twins that had been nurtured within. Perhaps the Emperor had not intended for there to be Omegon and Alpharius. That the two had been nourished as one accounted for their strange bond, and perhaps their slighter build in comparison to their brother Primarchs. Had the primogenitors of the Alpha Legion known this was where they would send their agent? Surely not, Alpharius thought. Who would have believed that this place still existed? Everything was pristine, exactly as it had been for decades, centuries perhaps. Alpharius wondered why this place had been kept in this way. What purpose did it serve? He heard Magos Orlandrias talking excitedly as he accessed the data terminal in the central tower. Wires snaked from the wrist of the tech priest, plugged into a series of sockets beneath a flickering holographic rune pad. A wide screen scrolled with a mass of symbols, the green light reflected in the Magos's eyes.
This is amazing, gushed the tech priest. So much is here. So much.
What have you found? Asked Korax as the Primarch looked over the Magos's shoulder.
Everything, I would say. All of the genetic files for you and your brothers. I have studied the splicing of genes and the manipulation of the same for over 100 years, and I cannot comprehend more than a fraction of this.
The Magos glanced at Korax, his strange eyes wide.
The root factors alone would take several years of analysis to deconstruct.
We do not have years, said Korax. Horus readies himself for his offensive. I need something that would enable me to rebuild the Raven Guard, not spawn endless theses and theories for your Martian friends.
Of course.
muttered Orlandrius. He busied himself at the console for a while longer, while Alpharius absorbed what had been said. Korax intended to bring the Raven Guard back to full strength, that much was now clear. Alpharius did not know if such a thing was possible, but if it were, a restored Raven Guard Legion would be a serious threat to the War Master's plans. The Alpha Legionnaire was confused by the possibility. The Raven Guard had been close to destruction, so what purpose would be served by allowing them to escape and cling to this lifeline? It struck Alpharius that there was some more complex scheme at work than the simple elimination of his adopted legion. He considered the possibilities and came to the inevitable conclusion. The Alpha Legion could do what Korax intended. If he was able to secure the secrets of the gene tech for his Primarch, his legion would become paramount amongst those who had turned against the Emperor. He could see the sense in such a plan, and was pleased that it offered some explanation as to why the Alpha Legion had sided with Horus. The War Master had struck the first blow against the Emperor, but it would be the Alpha Legion who would eventually emerge from the shadows to take their rightful place. His thoughts were interrupted by an exclamation from the Magos.
"Look at this!"
Korax leaned even closer, brow furrowed, as he observed Orlandrius's work.
"Here we see the derived strands, the foci divergences from the Primarch material that was used by the Emperor for the first of the Legiones Astartes."
Everyone in the chamber had heard the Magos' words. Custodians and legionaries all turned toward the tech priest as he continued, talking more to himself than the audience.
"It's a masterpiece of engineering,"
Orlandrius said.
"Such sublime beauty encoded into the structure, yet imbued with endless potential."
"Speak clearly," said Korax. "What have you found?"
"Evidence of the Emperor's true greatness, proof of his claim to be the Omnisire,"
exclaimed the Magos.
"New life from old life, millions of years of evolution, extracted, distilled, and improved. It is the key."
"The key to what? You make no sense, Magos," said Agapito. "What is so important?"
"We must look for the stasis chamber,"
announced Orlandrius, turning away from the screen. He flinched, as if he had forgotten the others around him. He looked around the chamber for a few moments before addressing himself to Korax.
"It would take many years of deciphering these files to produce anything of direct use to you, Lord Korax. However, in the vault somewhere is a stasis cubicle which contains the secret we require."
The Magos' words prompted another flash of memory in the mind of Korax. He saw a cylinder, glowing with silvery light, encased by a mesh of golden wire. A sequence entered his thoughts, and the Primarch tapped in the code on the holograph. Dozens of lights lit up on the central console, flashing in sequence as Korax entered the cipher. When he tapped the last rune, the strobing lights settled into a constant gleam. New messages flickered across the screen, announcing security protocol deactivation, granting access to the console's contents. With a puff of escaping gases, lines appeared in the central spire of the machine, which resolved into panels that extended outwards and slid down into newly revealed recesses. Silver glowed from within as an intricate wire cradle emerged from the depths of the device, just as Korax remembered. At the heart of the mesh was a narrow cylinder half a meter high. It was encrusted with suspensor devices that lifted it from the containing web as if it ascended on the light itself. A bluish-green fluid trembled inside, freed from the stasis field that had confined it.
"This is the true secret of the vault," announced Korax.
Around him the Raven Guard, Mechanicum adepts and custodians gathered, attention drawn by the spectacle.
"This is the gift of the Emperor."
"What is it?"
asked Agapito, voice hushed.
"The source of our existence, Commander. Living genetic material used to create the Primarchs."
Though he did not have the expertise of the Magos Genitor, Korax knew enough from his own experience and the memories of the Emperor to understand the importance of the discovery.
The Emperor had explained to him many years ago how the Primarch's genetic material had been used to create the first warriors of the Legiones Astartes. His Raven Guard were his genetic sons, in a way, as all of the legions were of their Primarchs. Each of the 20 had been created by the Emperor, unique with their own strengths and weaknesses. What the Raven Guard had was the blueprint from which each of the 20 Primarchs had been first derived. It was pure, for want of a better word, unchanged by the Emperor's subsequent experiments. The perfect specimen from which to extract gene seed for future generations of Raven Guard, or to create a whole new generation of Primarchs.
"Surely you do not intend to remove this sample from Terra," said Arcatus. "I am no Magos, but I understand enough history to know that the secret of the Primarch's genetic code cannot be allowed out of this vault. What if it were to fall into the hands of Horus?"
"The Emperor himself led me to this place," replied the Primarch. "I need no further warning nor license from you. It is the wish of the Emperor that I return to Deliverance to rebuild my legion with this technology."
"Is it true, Lord?" asked Agapito. "Does this sample hold the key to the future of the Raven Guard?"
"Yes, it does," said Korax, smiling at the thought. "An untainted source of gene seed, but more than just that. If the Magos and I can unlock its secrets, we can combine its potential with that of the Raven Guard gene code. The Primarchs were created from birth, while a legionary must wait until adolescence before implantation can begin. Imagine a generation of Raven Guard that combined the code of both. The superior growth of a Primarch enmeshed with the abilities of a legionary. What would normally take a generation could be accomplished in months."
"What about training?" said Arcatus. "What about proper education in the nature of enlightenment? A legionary is more than just an enhanced body. He is forged in mind as well as flesh. These things cannot be rushed. Their implementation is as much an important part of the process as the physical changes."
"I did not say it would be instant," said Korax, annoyed by the custodian's negativity. "You still fail to understand the full possibility. At present, only the smallest percentage of candidates are suitable for gene seed implantation. If we can use the Primarch material properly, that will no longer be the case. We could take any child from the earliest age and accelerate their development, as mine was hastened, any child. Our recruitment pool would expand from a few tens of thousands to millions."
"But each Primarch was crafted by the Emperor himself," said Agapito. "A labor of many years by the greatest mind of mankind. We do not have such resources, or the time."
"Which is why we will not be creating a new generation of Primarchs," snapped Korax, exasperated that his commander showed such doubt. He calmed himself, realizing that Agapito and the others, except perhaps for Orlandrias, could not comprehend the technical issues involved.
"The tech priest will aid me in isolating those strands of the material we require, and we will then improve the Raven Guard gene seed with that information. A blend of Primarch and Legiones Astartes, a warrior superior to a legionary, yet produced on an unprecedented scale."
"And I say again that such a weapon cannot be allowed to leave Terra," said Arcatus. "If the Emperor had desired such a thing, he would have created it himself. There is a reason why he fashioned the gene seed of the legions in the way he did. Unless you think you will achieve something the Emperor could not."
The retort that sprang to Korax's mind stayed there as he considered the custodian's words. Was he allowing himself to get carried away by the prospect of rebuilding the Raven Guard? Was it even possible to achieve what he had said? Given pause, he took a deep breath, considering his answer.
"It may be that the Emperor chose to create the gene seed with its current limitations for good reason. But the galaxy has changed," said the Primarch. "It is equally ludicrous to suggest the Emperor granted me access to this facility without knowing my full intent. He has allowed us to enter this place so that we might make use of its contents. It is the will of the Emperor that we unravel the secret of this technology and use it in the fight against Horus."
Arcatus had no reply to this and turned away without further word. Agapito remained, and he spoke with concern in his voice.
Whatever the rights and wrongs, I can't say, Lord, said the commander. But Arcata speaks the truth when he says that this is dangerous. We cannot let knowledge of its existence spread too far.
What are you suggesting? Said the Primarch.
The only man on this expedition who is not a Raven Guard or custodian is Orlandrias, and the Sigilite vouched for his presence. If we return to deliverance with this technology, it will not go unnoticed by those outside the Legion, said Agapito. The fewer that know of its existence, the better. I think we must learn a lesson from the Emperor here. It will require facilities and technicians to perform the work to unlock the gene secrets. If such a place is heavily guarded, it will attract attention. We know there are still guild sympathizers on Lycaeus, and despite our best efforts, they still have the means to know what passes in the Ravenspire. We must avoid rousing their curiosity.
You make a good point, Commander, said Korax. I have been so focused on the retrieval of the genetic archive, I have not considered how we should house it. Your plan has merit. I will consider it.
And you really think it is possible to create a new form of legionary? Asked Agapito, his voice touched by awe. One that is as good as any of us, in a fraction of the time?
I do not only believe it is possible, I guarantee it, said Korax. With Horus poised to strike, we must retaliate in some fashion. Unless we have the means to perpetuate the Legion for the war to come, we cannot risk our current strength in such an attack. The Emperor has placed his faith in me, and I will not fall short of the mark. The Raven Guard will have a part to play before the matter with Horus is decided.
I am sure of that, Lord, Agapito said. What of the custodians? Do you think they will cause further problems?
Arcatus overplays his objections, said Korax. He must attend to his duties as he sees them, but I think he understands what we will achieve. I believe I have convinced our companion that we pose no threat to the Emperor.
The exit from the vault was far less fraught with danger than the entry. Having secured the contents of the inner chamber, the precious stasis capsule of Primarch material included, the Raven Guard loaded up their supply carriers and heavy servitors to extract their spoils to the surface. They worked in shifts, escorting lines of cases and crates back through the dormant labyrinth to the waiting shuttles on the ice shelf at the entrance. Data crystals and storage units were carefully sealed within protective boxes. Larger pieces of equipment, the purpose of which was lost on all except the Magos and Korax, were secured to the track trolleys that had brought in the expedition's ammunition and food. Only the incubators and a few power generators were left behind. It took the best part of a day to ferry everything to the surface. During that time, a signal was sent to the Raven Guard ship waiting in orbit. Drop craft from the Avenger arrived as the last of the expedition emerged from the vault, together with the most precious treasures, which were watched over by the Primarch himself, Orlandrias, and Arcatus. Alpharius, along with the rest of Sergeant Dawes' squad, again found himself hefting boxes onto the dropships while the commanders discussed what was to happen next. Alpharius dawdled as much as he was able to hear snippets of the discussion, though he learnt nothing that he would not have expected.
"Be very careful with that,"
said Agapito, as Alpharius took the handles of a frost-rimed crate, Velps at the other end. A blinking energy monitor on the side of the box indicated the below-zero temperature within.
"Break that stasis generator, and we'll have gone through all of this for nothing."
"Aye, Commander," replied Velps.
They carried their cargo onto the ramp of the closest Stormbird, treading carefully through the drifts of snow. Alpharius was quietly amazed at the contents of the container, the stuff from which the Primarchs had been created, from which the Emperor had engineered the Legiones Astartes, and ultimately the gene material that had turned him into an Alpha Legionnaire. Odd thoughts crept into his mind as he hefted the box over the lip of the entry portal. How long had the Emperor labored to create the contents of the stasis chest? Decades? Centuries? Perhaps even millennia? For untold generations he had waited, and when the Emperor had shown himself to the galaxy, it was at the head of the Legiones Astartes, his chosen warriors. The Alpha Legion had fought alongside the others for many years during the Great Crusade, seeing time and again their companions reunited with their genetic fathers, while they fought on without the guidance of their Primarch. Alpharius remembered the discovery of his namesake, the last of the Primarchs to be found. It had been as joyous for the Alpha Legion as the same event had been for the Lunar Wolves, or the Iron Hands, or the Raven Guard. Each had been celebrated by all of the legions as a momentous occasion, yet the reunification with Alpharius had been a muted affair, almost overlooked by the other Primarchs and legions. That the nature of the twin Primarchs was deemed a secret not to be revealed had only deepened the lack of celebration. It had rankled Alpharius that his legion had been all but dismissed by those who had found their Primarchs. It had been an afterthought, a niggling gap that had been filled, rather than being seen for what it truly was, the apex of the Great Crusade, when the last of the Primarchs had been brought back into the Emperor's armies. Alpharius's discovery was the culmination of the Emperor's plans, not the mundane arrival of a latecomer. With the aid of Velps, Alpharius slid the stasis container into a locker beneath the decking. They secured it with tightened straps so that it would not move, and lowered the deck grating over it, stowing it away for the journey to orbit.
"Makes you thankful, doesn't it?"
said Velps, pointing down at the container.
"Thankful about what?" replied Alpharius.
"Thankful for the Emperor," Velps explained. "I don't know why Horus has turned, or those others, but it confounds me. The Emperor created us. I mean, literally, he made us what we are. He gave us weapons and armor and a galaxy to conquer and let us free. He made us the future of humanity, and that is something to be thankful for, deep in the heart. We were right there. It was almost finished. That bastard Horus, he had everything thanks to the Emperor, and now he's turned his back on him. There's no forgiving something like that."
Alpharius did not argue, though he was stung by Velps's words. He could say nothing in defense of the choices the Alpha Legion had made. He did not fully understand why the twin Primarchs had sided with Horus, but he trusted them to know what was for the best.
"I'm sure everyone will get what they deserve, in the end," he said, slapping a comradely hand to Velps's shoulder.
It left Alpharius unsettled as they made their way back down the ramp. The rest of the expedition was already tramping onto the shuttles and dropships. Sergeant Daw and the others were waiting to board, not far from Agapito and Korax. Alpharius and Velps joined the squad just as Arcatus approached the Primarch.
"I have spoken with Malkador," the warrior announced, "and he agrees with me. I and my custodian guard will travel with you in order that this cargo is protected properly."
"That is not necessary," said Agapito. "Your presence will arouse suspicion. Besides, we don't need your help."
"My commander is correct, if blunt," said Korax. "A group of custodians will attract unwarranted attention, and it is with secrecy that our cargo is best protected."
"We come with you, or you do not leave," said Arcatus. "I leave the choice up to you."
Korax sighed and nodded.
"Very well, custodian, have it your way," said the Primarch.
"You will travel with me. Be warned, space is already pushed aboard the Avenger. You will have to billet with my warriors."
"That will not be an issue," said Arcatus.
"Not a problem,"
said Agapito with some satisfaction.
"The Raven Guard will be happy to extend the same hospitality to the Legio Custodes as they gave to us."
The group parted, leaving Alpharius and the rest of the squad in the snow. Alpharius looked at the golden-armored warriors accompanying the Primarch and felt on edge. With the vault contents in their possession, the Raven Guard would be more vigilant than ever. A slap on the shoulder guard snapped Alpharius from his distracted thoughts. Sergeant Daw jabbed a thumb at a nearby dropship.
"Get on board," said Daw. "We're heading back to Deliverance."